Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the backyard. We want you to pull up a chair, relax, and just feel the vibe. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Backyard Lavish. It's my pleasure. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and it's my pleasure this evening to welcome you and to tell you that I am very excited in sharing the Jamaica History Month. We have made some wonderful discoveries about our past. And this evening, we have a lot to lavish about because through the courtesy of the pieces of Jamaica, pieces of our past from the Jamaican Gleaner, I have personally uncovered such wonderful information that has sort of put things in perspective for me in terms of dates and times. And I hope, like I am feeling excited that all my listeners will enjoy the labyrinth and participate, and I see that my co-host has joined me, and I'm going to take a minute to welcome her. Welcome, Donna.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, and I'm looking forward to the show, and it seems like it's going to be a great show. What you have here, which is the motto and all, and it's kind of interesting because with that model, I don't know if you remember, it was the same model that Barack Obama used in a part of his inauguration address. But
no, I don't remember that. Is that neat?
Yeah.
Do you remember the words?
Well, I remember him saying pretty much out of many, we are one, or something to that effect. But he talked about it on this day we gather because we've chosen hope over fear, unity over purpose. unity of purpose over conflict, discord. And then he went on to talk about the United States of America and how out of many people, you know, many different types of people, we really are one, and that we're, you know, we're from the United States. That was pretty much.
That is great, because hopefully before, during my lifetime, everybody will be just Americans instead
yeah.
of Afro-American and whatever other kind of Americans.
Yeah, that would be good.
It sure would. Anyway, thank you for that information. But there was something very interesting. I don't know if you remember me mentioning in one of our shows that I had come across this information. I think it was on Wikipedia, about the first Jamaicans coming to the United States. And the dates just didn't sort of make sense to me at all. I couldn't figure out how it all tied together, because this particular article mentioned that the first Jamaicans came here as free men, free black, apparently black men, because they mentioned them as Jamaicans, and they came on a Dutch frigate in 1619. That was the year.
Wow.
1619.
Mm-hmm.
And they arrived in Jamestown, Virginia, on a Dutch frigate. Now, you know, 1619 was actually before they started to bring African slaves here, according to this document, because that trade started in 1629.
Oh, wow.
Yet these four Jamaicans, now let me see how many they say. Mm-hmm. They came out. 20 voluntary indentured workers arrived in Jamestown, Virginia on a Dutch frigate. And I'm thinking to myself, 1619, that doesn't make sense. Anyway, you know, it went around in my brain for a while, and then I couldn't sort of put it in place. However, when I started to put together the material for this Out of Many One People and the different races that, you know, went to Jamaica at some time or another, it fell into place because, let me just tell you how this came about.
Mm-hmm.
On the pieces of, you know, pieces of the past, they tell you each individual race that came to Jamaica. Well, we know, I'm sure in our talks we have discussed the fact that Jamaica was occupied by the Spanish before the British, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they were Africans in Jamaica under the Spanish. They were Spanish and Portuguese people who got, they weren't slaves, they were prisoners of war. They came from West Africa in 1513 to Jamaica. They were servants, cowboys, herders of cats, pigs, and horses, as well as hunters. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So I am supposing that, I am assuming then, that it's perhaps some of those that came over to the United States as indentured servants, 20 of them, on this Dutch ship in 16, whatever I told you. I mean, I'm just freaking out because it's now fall in place. You know what I mean?
Right,
because
right.
I'm saying, how could they be here in 1619? That doesn't make sense to me as free people. You know, 1619, and this article also stated that they lived and worked as free persons, even when a Portuguese vessel arrived with the first shipload of Africans in 1629. So you had Jamaicans, people from Jamaica, that were working here as free people in 1619, even when the first African slaves came here.
Right.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, to me, the information is just, you know, sort of falling into place. And I'm saying, well, that now makes sense.
You're saying that but these people were also Africans. They were just up under the Portuguese rule.
Right, but they were not slaves. They were free men.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? They came here as indentured servants, like a lot of other races came to Jamaica, is my point.
Right.
I see that our loyal listener is online, so let me welcome him. Good evening, Mr. New Yorker. Hello? I think it's 718-798. Are you there, and would you like to interact with us? If you do, hit 1 on your keyboard, and we'll know that you're ready to talk.
Well, let me just tell you, I Googled the Obama, what he had said on it was March 18th when he said, we may not look the same and we may not have come from the same place, but we all want to move in the same direction towards a better future for our children, our grandchildren. This nation is more than the sum of its parts, that out of many, we are truly one. And that's
hallelujah. Yeah, well, you know, this we had this motto in Jamaica even before independence.
Uh-huh.
They, you know, under British rule, we had, that was our motto. It was on our, you know, our monies and everything. And that was, as a matter of fact, the images are Arawak Indians, the images on the motto itself, because they were the original inhabitants of the island. So back to what I was saying before. So it made sense. They, you know, the article went on to say that these people were captured as prisoners of war during the time when the Portuguese and the Spanish were, you know, on top of the world, and there was a war in, I think, some other part of the world. These Africans were from West Africa, and they were the Iberian Peninsula is where they were taken. They were taken from West Africa by the Spanish and the Portuguese, and they were taken to Jamaica as servants, cowboys, herders of cattle, pigs, and horses, as well as hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the English captured Jamaica, of course, the Spanish was fighting against them, and they joined in the fight. And I suppose they were prisoners. You know, they took them as prisoners as war, so they were slaves then, called them slaves. But they got their freedom, and a lot of them fled into the mountains, and I suppose some stowed away on whatever ships that were there. I don't know. I'm just making up stories. But it's interesting because, you know, the Maroons that still have, you know, some special place in Jamaica, I've never been there, but, you know, they have their own government. They're not governed by the rules of any other part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the original, descendants of the original inhabitants are still there. And it's a place.
If it wasn't for you all talking about, I wouldn't even know that there was such a thing as Maroons.
Oh, yes. And it's interesting because I had a friend who, he was a Muslim, and he was very involved in history. And he had made trips in other parts of the world, like he went to Australia, and there were Maroons there too. And apparently these people knew their tribe or whatever I don't know how the name Maroons came. But it's interesting because he did a study, and he said that the Maroons in Jamaica at the time, and this was like 10, 20 years ago, had the same customs like the Maroons in other parts of the world.
Wow.
Yeah, they were sort of, their history was the same, and they were, and at that time, they were just knowing, you know, this is long before the internet itself, but they were just finding out about each other around the world, you know, because the new communication that was available. But anyway, in terms of Jamaica, the first arrival of Africans in Jamaica was in 1513. And then the slave trade actually started with the British.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that really started that. But listen to this. During that time, they say each estate was its own small world, complete with an entire labor force of field workers and skilled artists, a hospital, water supply, cattle, mules, and horses, as well as its own fuel source. Each plantation fueled the wheels of British trade, of course, because sugar was the big thing then.
Uh-huh.
But listen to the interesting part. I found this part interesting. The slaves had their own plantations. They grew their own food. Isn't that interesting?
Uh-huh.
And they let me say what has it said here. They grew their own food. They had even had their own hospital and their own doctor. I never knew all of this.
And this was all on each individual kind of plantation.
Right, right. If the plantation was big enough, they said, then it would have that. So that means that, you know, and I suppose that is why, and they say they practiced a lot of their customs that they brought with them. But there's another interesting thing to me here where it says in 1690, Jamaica's population was relatively equally mixed between black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that something? Because I suppose there were, you know, not a lot of slaves at that particular time and a whole lot of plantation owners.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm trying to say?
All right.
So it was about 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Then as more people came to become plantation owners, they would bring more slaves in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, sugar at that time was like gold.
It's like cotton here.
Right, right, right. Definitely. So I just find it very, very, very fascinating.
Well, you know, I guess the thing about it which is interesting is that, well, you got to figure for such a small island, if they're, you know, they're bringing in, you know, the Africans, I mean, I would assume that it wouldn't take very long for, you know, the Africans to actually begin to take over in terms of numbers, you know, if they're continuing to bring them in, particularly when you have such a small island, a lot of the people or going back and forth to Spain or Portugal or, you know, the various other countries. And
once the British took over, the Spanish wasn't there anymore, nor was going there. But another thing that I found quite interesting, and I see we have quite a few callers. I want to welcome all our callers and our listeners online, and I would like to invite you to hit one on your telephone if you would like to make a comment or interact with us. But this evening you are listening to Backyard Labrish, and we're labrishing about Jamaica. It's Jamaica's History Month, and we're talking about the different nationalities that came to Jamaica at different periods, why they came, how they came, and the reason that our motto is out of many one people is because it's truly so. And it's interesting to know all the different nationalities that make up the mix. And that's what makes Jamaica and Jamaicans so unique, at least in my thinking. But so the Africans, I think, were the first, except for the people who discovered the country and owned it, you know, which was at first the Spanish, then the English. So then, after that, another thing that was interesting is that when they brought new slaves in, they would have what they call a seasoning, where the new slaves that were brought in were taught. And remember now that a lot of them were tradesmen. They came there as, they were hunters, they were different things. You know, they were not just field hands, or so they worked in different capacities then, let's put it that way. Then once they got to the plantation, the new ones, they underwent what is called a seasoning process, in which they were placed with an experienced slave who taught them the ways of the estate. Now remember, most of them, according to this documentation, was coming from the same part of Africa. So I'm assuming that they perhaps understood each other and spoke the same language. And this is from 1750 to 1807 we're talking about. So it says here, estates had gardens, and the slaves had their own kitchen gardens as well as their provision grounds found in the hills. And I remember as a child growing up and I went to the country, they would call the things they got out of the fields ground provisions. That's what they used to call it. So I suppose that is all where that came from, which were required by law. It was a law from as early as 1678. During slavery, however, slaves kept pigs and poultry and grew mangoes, plantains, ackees, okras, yams, and other ground provisions. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and so you're saying that this was something that they were able to keep themselves and do for their families. This wasn't something like, you know, at one point, you know, it moved from slavery to sharecropping, where you would, you know, utilize the land and grow crops, but then you'd have to, you know, pay a portion of your crops out to the owner of that property. You didn't actually own it.
No, this period we're talking about is they were growing these things for their own consumption.
Oh, that's pretty good.
This is in 1678.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tonight I'm covering, you know, when each race came and why they came. Okay, so I'm moving on now to the next set, who would be, believe it or not, the Jews. And they came for a different reason. A lot of them came from Portugal because of the whatever was going on there with King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella. And they were being persecuted, I suppose. Religious persecution. In 1494, when Columbus, I think, discovered Jamaica, Jews of Portuguese and Spanish ancestors first landed on the island some 40 years later. So they got there in 1530. The first Jews came to Jamaica in 1530. I mean, that's a long time. So they at one point were slave owners too, but they had indentured servants too. It's interesting because we didn't learn all about this in school at all. It says, after many years, groups of Jews approached their Spanish governor. This is during the Spanish acquisition of the island, and requested permission to settle on the island. Permission was duly granted. So this was in 1530. And the first set of Jews settled actually in Spanish Town, which at that time Spanish Town was the capital of Jamaica. It later moved to Kingston, but the original, you know, center of the island was Spanish Town. So it's very, very interesting. I'm just so excited because, you know, I spent my growing up years in Jamaica, and I didn't know any of this. So it's just very intriguing to me. And I don't know if Lazon, but I he did some research on some of his family and my family, and I think they came from Brazil. But people from Portuguese during this, you know, when they were being chased out of Portugal by the Spanish queen at the time and king, they went to Brazil. Interesting. So they said, for many years, groups of Jews approached their Spanish governor and requested permission to settle. So that's when the Jews came. And in 1655, they had, you know, they built a synagogue in Spanish Town, and they have one of the oldest synagogues in Kingston. The synagogue in Kingston is 350 years old. Interesting. So then came the Irish after that. The first Irish have lived in Jamaica 350 years. They came there in 1600s. It doesn't have a specific date. At the time of the British occupation, when the British captured Jamaica, that's when the Irish came. Now, why did they come? Interesting. In 1641, Ireland's population stood close to 1.5 million. Following a 1648 battle in Ireland known as the Siege of Someplace, in which Irish rebels were brutally subdued, one man, Oliver's son Henry, was named Major General in command of English forces in Ireland. And that's how the first Irish people started to go to Jamaica, because of his English connection. It says, under his jurisdiction, thousands of Irishmen and women were shipped to the West Indies to provide a source, here again, of indentured labor between 1648 and 1655. Over 12,000 political prisoners alone were sent to Barbados. And then another set was sent to Jamaica. Isn't that something? Huh. Interesting. So then after the Irish came the Germans. The Germans came to Jamaica in 1783. Isn't that interesting? I'm telling you. Oh, I have a hand raised, and let me just see who would like to interact with us, because I'm getting so excited I can hardly read this documentation. It's just, I have 770-941. Good evening. This is Margaret, and you're tuned in to Backyard Labish. Who do we have with us?
Margaret, are you? Is that me that you're
hearing
right
now? Oh, it's you. You just had your hand up again. All right, sorry.
I must have pushed the button by mistake, but that's okay.
Yes.
Kind of curious that. So now I think I must have missed the part. Why did the Jewish population come to Jamaica?
Because of religious persecution in Portugal.
How did they find out about Jamaica? That's what I'm kind of – I know about the Irish. They got there via the guy through his connections with
– Well, remember, the Spanish was really very strong at one time. You know, they were just as strong as the British. So I'm sure that the lords, the kings and queens, the information was being passed around about the New World, you know, because that was considered part of the New World that was just discovered. I see 718-654 wants to be heard. So welcome. You're on. This is Backyard Labish, and you're speaking with Margaret and Donna.
Hi, Margaret and Donna. This is Sharon. How are you?
Hi, Sharon. Welcome back. We're great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Nice
Good.
To have you.
Thanks. Nice to be back and listening to this wonderful topic again. The reason I wanted to jump in, when I heard you mention about the Germans coming to Jamaica, a lot of listeners will probably know that this is one of the communities that is still very vibrant and very, very active in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place that I've yet to visit. It's a place called Germantown.
Right. I was going to mention that. You are right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. That's fine. That is fine because, you know, it makes this more authentic.
Yes.
They have been there from 1783.
Wow. Amazing.
They talk about them going to different parts of the island, but mostly in they were, first of all, let me see, this is the Germans. I have, each one has a different sheet. but they were mostly in, I think it's called Irish Town or whatever, Seaforth Town. We didn't have the parishes then, but
it says
Cornwall Township of Seaforth Town.
Would that be in Westmoreland now? I'm not sure if any of the listeners.
I'm not sure, but I think it's. They say that sometimes they call it Germantown.
Yes.
And sometimes it's called.
Unfortunately, I left my notes at work.
It's St. Mary. They talk about them being in St. Anne and St. Mary and Portland too. It's along the coastline, apparently, you know. They say here St. Anne, St. Mary, the border, and Portland.
Yeah.
You know what's kind of interesting to me, not having been there, but, you know, just visual, you know, only visualizing on the map, is that it seems like such a small place. And yet, when you was talking about the Maroons, and then you're talking about Germantown, you're talking about various other, I guess, ethnicities that are there. But what's interesting is when you say, but I've never been there, as though it was like far away, but it just seems like such a small place. It seems like it's so much, you know, like, is it as big as Georgia? I mean, it seems so small that you would seem that you could just go from one end to the other without.
Oh, well, that's what most foreigners think. But you know, we're a very mountainous country. There are parts of Jamaica that are uninhabited. It's not flat like Georgia or Florida. I mean, you have places where, you know, people have not yet conquered to live. I shouldn't say can't, because now they're building houses on top of some hills that before all the technology that we have now, people wouldn't believe that you could put a house up there. You know what I'm trying to say? Needless to say that the view is spectacular, because you must remember it's an island, so we're surrounded by the Caribbean Sea. So when you're high up enough, everywhere you look, you can see the sea, even if you're in the mountains. It's possible to have a view, you know, have a spectacular view. I have another caller at 646-479 that has a raised hand, so I'm opening up the mic. Good evening.
Good evening.
Oh, 646, new number.
That's
welcome.
I fell because I was on the road.
Well, welcome to the backyard, Mr. New York.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for tuning in, and I want to welcome all my listeners, and we're getting a little spirited here because of all this neat information we're finding and connecting the dots. And so we were discussing when the Germans came, and their Sharon just shared with us that there's still a vibrant German town in Jamaica that she has never visited. Neither have I.
It's actually I think the Seaford town is in the hills of Westmoreland, 25 miles from Montego Bay.
Right.
And the reason that I wanted to particularly mention this is that the people there are a peculiar race unto themselves. I don't mean peculiar meaning odd.
I know.
But they've retained a lot of their German features.
Right.
But
I
they're
know.
Typically 100% Jamaican.
Right.
And they talk worse than us.
But, well, you know, I that's why it's sort of not strange to us. But my family is from Westmoreland. So I was born and raised in Kingston, but I did a lot of visiting and staying in Westmoreland. So I was accustomed to seeing people with brown skin and blue eyes. With brown skin and one blue eye and one green eye, with beige skin and blonde hair.
Blonde hair.
You know, yeah. You know, I grew up around people like that, with very white skin and kinky hair, with white skin and straight hair. You know what I mean? There were all sorts of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there's one place in St. Elizabeth. I think it's Treasure Beach.
Yes.
That I spent some time as a child. And then it was like a rainbow of colors.
Yes, they have that kind of golden tan light skin.
Yes.
And I
remember with
Treasure Beach, yes.
With the sunlight. I mean, as kids, the some of my kids I would play with, their hair would just glisten like gold.
Yes.
You know, when the sunlight in the water, it was just quite a sight. Well, of course, it was not quite a sight to me. But looking back now, you know, as I look back, because I would visit that much, and I would always see people of different shades. I was not sort of intimidated or alarmed when I came to the United States. I mean, as a matter of fact, the most alarming time I know I had is since I lived in the South and my first, I think it was World of Wheels show, when there was just a whole lot of Southern country people who, to me, I had not seen so many of them all in one place. And a lot of them, to me, had very Negroid features, you know, heavy noses and things that I had not seen in the North. And that was a little strange to me, but anything else wasn't in terms of colors on people. So but putting all of this together now has, to me, put some more light on this mix of out of many one people, because they came from long, long ago.
That's right.
You know, very long time. We're talking about 1600s and 1500s. That is a long time. Even though I keep telling myself I'm a senior, I say, damn.
That's really a long time.
Okay.
And perhaps that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you can make your comment.
I was just going to say, and perhaps that now explains why there's still that affinity with the Germans and the Dutch and the Spanish, who kind of make up a great proportion, not just Americans who will constantly visit Jamaica. And actually now in our times, you find people who move to Jamaica.
Oh, yes. Okay, now I want to talk about the next group who came sort of later, and this is about the 1845.
Mm-hmm.
The Lebanese came in 1845. Now, the reason they came, the Indians came before. The arrival of the Indians, no, we're from 18. Well, the dates are always going to get mixed up because I'm just so excited. I'm trying to read all of that at the same time. The arrival of the Indians were from 1845 to 1921, when over 36,000 East Indians, mainly of Hindu faith, were brought to Jamaica. Close to two-thirds of them remained. Now, following the abolition of slavery in 1830, after failed attempts to source much-needed labor, they decided to import these Indians as indentured servants. That was why they came. They came the same way the black people came here, or the Jamaicans came here in 1516 as indentured servants. Isn't that something?
Right.
So, also the Chinese were brought in originally as indentured servants to help work the plantations. So we have the only ones that did not come by that means are the Jews and the Lebanese. Did you know that, Leigh?
And the Irish too, right?
No.
Well, the Irish actually came in a similar vein, but they couldn't do the kind of work required.
Right. They were recruited as indentured servants, but they did not have the stamina for it.
Exactly, and they started dying out from the certain different diseases, tropical diseases.
Right. Oh, I'm telling you, it's something else. And so we have the Lebanese who came because they just they were being persecuted. Most of these Lebanese that came were Christians, and they weren't, you know, they were not, they did not have, they really, they were not in the majority of whatever the religion was in their country. And there was a fair, a big exhibition in 1891. And this exhibition was held on the grounds of what is now Woolmer School. And it drew over 300,000 visitors from around the world, including some from the Middle East. They spoke of opportunities in Jamaica, and soon Middle Easterners from Lebanon and Palestine, such as noted father of Jamaica tourism, Abe Issa's great-grandfather, decided to journey to Jamaica to try their luck at selling dry goods. Isn't that something? Did you know that, Leigh?
Yep.
Oh, boy, you're much more on this history than I am.
Several of the Issas went to my school, you know.
Oh, so you learned the history from them?
Not from them, but, you know, we were interested in how Uncle Abe got his treasures, you know.
Right, well, that is partly from them.
He used to sell, as you say, dry goods in a pushcart until he had enough money to open
buy a bicycle, yes, and then they moved on. This article, and I must encourage our listeners, this is part of Pieces of the Past, and you can find this on the Backyard Library's website under Resources. If you go under the link that says Resources, you will find that we have lots of resources that involves Jamaica and Jamaicans listed on that page. And you will see a link, I think, for Pieces of the Past. Anyway, they landed in Kingston in 1890. So we have different people, of course, coming for different reasons. And, you know, some came on their own. Some were brought in as indentured laborers. And some were brought in as slaves. And it's just a whole melting pot of all these different races and culture. Some went back home. Do you know they had a restriction on Chinese immigration up to a late year, like 1945, I think, is when that restriction was lifted because there were, I suppose, too many Chinese coming at that time. Let me see. It's just all very, very interesting. And I, you know, Leigh, as you say, you might know a lot, but I think that there are many Jamaicans that have no clue. We just know that all these different people are there, but we really never learned in school.
A lot of the history taught in the schools did not include a Jamaican history per se. It included either British history, or in my case, British and American history. But Jamaican history, you had to go digging. You know?
Right. Well, the digging has begun, and I'm hoping that for our listeners, this is an interesting subject, and we would really like some comments if you would go to our website, www.backyardlabish.com, and let us know if this is the kind of material that you enjoy. We want to build a community of interested parties, and the whole purpose of Backyard Labish, both the radio show and the website, is to celebrate our history and to educate the next generation about our history and to leave, as Donna liked to say, a living footprint of our history, our personal history. So we can do all of that because we have this marvelous new technology of the Internet.
And to also encourage Donna to go to Jamaica soon.
Right.
I'm waiting on Leigh to get there and invite me out because I know he probably has a cottage there as well as all these cottages all over.
Okay, we'll work on that.
And I have to have a good tour guide. You know, I can't just, like, show up in Jamaica and walk around.
Oh, well. Well, Sharon, did you have anything you wanted to share with us with the event that you attended? Sharon, are you there? Oh,
sorry,
I guess good.
Still got over. Maybe we should have her to kind of do that, talk about that on our next segment, because I think that was a great event that she went to, a very historic event, and maybe we can kind of talk about that from a historical standpoint.
Do you know what it was? Do you know what title it went under?
It went an Afui Ting. I think that was the title of it. Just a minute. I'm sorry. I did, somehow a mic got close here. 718-798. Your mic is oh dear. Just a minute. We have every now and then we have a little technical difficulty.
Well, one of the things that's kind of interesting, and Leigh, you can probably tell us, is we were talking about out of many one for the United States, and I was sharing that with Margaret. And one of the things that happened with it was that it was a model that was founded in 1776 and put on the seal of the United States. But it comes from a Latin term, and you probably know how to pronounce
that's
it.
A pluribus unum
is the
Latin term.
Right. Yeah. So
and you'll find
now,
that in all of your pennies.
Yeah. Is that on the pennies? Okay. Well.
Yeah.
Well. Now, is that the term that's used in Jamaica as well? Or I mean.
Oh yes. That's our motto.
I mean,
and it was before independence.
But do they say
no,
it in Latin,
is,
or do
this
they?
This is our motto from way back.
Right,
you know?
Pre-independence. They just kept that because
it is
one place that can truly say out of many one people, because as we have gone over this evening, the different times, the different nationalities, as we considered ourselves at during those days, not races, but nationalities would be the description if you were asked what your nationality was. However, I think that just going over or finding out all of this, how far back this went, you know, It sort of sheds some light on the fact. I never, not that I didn't understand.
The venue you went.
Somebody, okay, I have, let me just close the mics here. Please, if you would like to interact with us, just hit one on your mic, and then I'll open it up again. But I have a little disturbance, so I'm closing the mics. Okay, 718-654, you're on.
Hi, it's me again. I think I got disconnected. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, so I was just sharing with our listeners. We have Sharon on, and Sharon is in New York. And
hi, listeners. Hi, Radioland and radio co-hosts and colleagues. Hi,
yeah.
Leigh. How are you?
Leigh, are you open? I sort of closed everybody.
Oh, I think he's closed off. Okay.
Possibly. I had asked if there was anything about this information that you wanted to add to. I am just so excited.
Talking about out of many?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just that, you know, the fact that there's this wealth of information about Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
which is not really readily available. Your forum is now making it possible for people to learn about the history, which I think is really great. And I would encourage everybody to join Backyard Gibberish on Blog Talk Radio, because the community is growing, and it's about exchanging information, exchanging facts, that little facts that need to be out there. So thank you again for the forum, for the opportunity to be learning about my history.
Well, you're most welcome, and I'm learning too. You know, in my
it's amazing what's out there when you start digging.
Yes. And I'm a digger. You know, I love to research, so I could spend hours just going from one link to the next and connecting the dots. Because I read this information about the 20 Jamaicans that came here in 1615? And I'm saying, that doesn't make sense. And I got this on, I think it was Wikipedia. I'm saying, they've got to be wrong. 1619, it said 20 voluntary indentured workers arrived in Jamestown, Virginia. I'm saying, that doesn't make sense. Well, that's because I didn't know. And the Africans' trade into America started in 1629. They were here in 1619.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, yeah. So they predated slavery.
Yeah.
Or the official start of slavery.
I'm only sorry that they don't have any names attached to them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You know, people don't realize that there were free people of color who were free.
That's right, right.
While slavery was going on, and they were sometimes captured and forced into slavery because they were black.
Right.
When they were born free.
Yeah.
Or they earned their freedom.
Right. Even
so,
in Jamaica,
you know,
there were free ones while the slavery was going on.
Yeah.
So it's just... Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
You have that whole maroon history.
Right.
Which is so rich and, you know, kind of speaks to the fighting spirit of the Jamaican.
Right.
I
think it's interesting to also find out that at least in most of the slave trade, that the slaves that went to Jamaica were from West Africa. As a matter of fact, they named some of the ports that they were from. And they were given, some of their things were not taken away from them. And they were able to plant and had their own garden. And I suppose they were better fed and I suppose could work harder. So after slavery was abolished, I mean, the plantation owners were destitute because they had nobody to work the fields.
Right.
So then they started to, and what we have to remember is that there was poverty all over the world. You know what I mean? Like it is now, but in those days, I suppose it was even worse because not only was there poverty, people were not as educated as they are now. Even though the early people who came to America, I mean, they had, you know, very little schools. Schools were far away, you know, the early settlers. It was difficult. So when an opportunity came up for people to go someplace where there was work, you know, regardless of what race they were, if they were free, they would go and work because that's how the Indians came, the Chinese came.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these different people came. They came to work. Some of them didn't have the health and the strength to work. Of course, nobody could work as hard as the Africans because of the climate. You know, they were accustomed to the hot weather. You know, they were accustomed to being sort of in a lot of plants and more or less a jungle kind of atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm sure that the Irish weren't and the Indians weren't. So it was sort of a difference, but they all came. So it's just, to me, it's just really very, very fascinating. And on this pieces of the past is a lot more history. A lot of it not have to do with any particular race, but, you know, different things that happened in Jamaica that we perhaps don't know anything about. Different events. There were quite a few people. Even as you mentioned, I know one of your friends is a poet, but there was an Irish poet early. I mean, like in 16 something. That was quite famous, and there were, you know, a lot of famous people, and there were some of the different races that came who had an opportunity to go back from whence they came. But they chose to stay in Jamaica. They really did.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. And it spoke about how, you know, when the Chinese came first, that they did not allow their children or want their children to marry outside of their race. You know, they wanted to keep the race pure because they spoke a different language. They sort of huddled together and all of that. But that didn't last too long because the children, you know, as they grew up, interacted with all these different people around them.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
they talk about, you know, the German names, how there are just a few left now because of the intermarrying. You know, they have about 160 that are original, descendants of the original Germans.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. still living in
That's right.
these parts that I mentioned. So it's just, I have just been really very, very fascinating by mm-hmm. just discovering all of this information. And as I said, it's available on the website under resources. And I invite my listeners to go check it out, and I invite them to come join the community of Labrishers. And I see someone else wants to Labrish. So just a minute here while I see who it is. 770-941. That's you again, Donna. Why, how come you keep, I keep losing you? Donna, your mic is open. apparently, you keep getting disconnected for some reason.
No, I think that when you muted everyone, I got muted.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. So, again, for our listeners, you're listening to Backyard Labrish. And if any of our, the board is full, so I know we have a lot of listeners. I want to welcome you all and hope you're enjoying the Labrish. This evening, we're talking about our roots out of many one people, and we're just celebrating our diversity and the fact that Jamaicans are scattered all over the world. And one of the things we know now, we are from all over the world, because a lot of Jamaicans really cannot trace their roots to any one race, because there's mm-hmm. been intermarrying going on, you know, from long, long ago. So they have a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and they're all mixed up.
Mm. It would be interesting. I know they in England a couple of years ago, they had, and they also have it in America, the DNA project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to have a sampling of Jamaicans taking part in that DNA project to trace their ancestry.
Oh,
to see,
that
you know,
great.
How many races
yes,
are actually
yes.
in the Jamaican, you know, race, so to speak.
Right.
It certainly
right.
is true that Jamaicans really are. We are, you know, out of many, we are one.
Right. I know at one time, perhaps in the 30s, Jamaica was actually listed as the most multiracial place in the world.
Goodness.
It was.
Wow.
Because there were, you know, as you can see why, because of all of this, going back from 1615 and 15 this and 18 that, there were all these. Right now I have counted 7 different races, 7 different people from 7 different parts of the world, you know, the Middle East, I mean, England, Ireland.
Mm.
I don't see Germany, yes, a far race from, you know what I mean? I have not found anything about Australia itself. I haven't found where any Australians. But there was a part on the Germans where a visitor, because they had, you know, we had people visiting Jamaica from long ago, even before they really had a real tourist industry. The people who had money or who came on boats, because it was such a picturesque island. I think it's one of the most beautiful islands in the Caribbean, just because of its location and its heights and just its demographics. I think that's one of the things that make it so unique. So people would come, the people who could afford it or at the time would come just to visit, because on my German paper there was a letter from someone who visited Jamaica, a German who visited Jamaica, and then was writing back to the person there, or they, you know, they were describing what it was like, and it was just so fascinating to me, because I said, oh, people were sort of moving around during those years. And I think it's because of part of our diversity why Jamaicans move around so much, because there's not a part of the world you perhaps wouldn't find a Jamaican.
Exactly. And that's what's so fascinating to me, that I think you've got Jamaicans in every part of the world.
Yes.
If you blog, I mean, they've got a Cool Runnings restaurant in Australia.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, but there don't think there are that many Jamaicans in Australia, but Jamaicans are everywhere. They're
everywhere.
In China.
There's a Cool Running here, too, in Atlanta.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
So we're everywhere. As they say, we lick a butt, we talawa.
Yes, yes, yes. I see that 646 would like to interact with us. So.
No, I got cut off as did
Donna.
Donna.
Okay, well, welcome back.
I think maybe you ought to dig and see what influence the United Fruit Company had with the movement of Jamaicans prior to, I mean, during the time that we're talking, you know, 15,
United
16.
Fruit Company. Okay,
yeah.
I certainly will, because you're talking to the research queen.
The trading of produce.
Right.
That's a good point.
Right.
Yeah.
Jamaica had the most lucrative sugar trade. And that I know, it's in these documents. They had the most lucrative sugar trade. And I think it's just because of the climate and the terrain.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a letter here from a German dated 1778. A German tourist to Jamaica wrote happily, "As soon as we disembarked, a man who was on the shore came to welcome us in a most polished manner in the German language." So they were visiting in 1778, and they were greeted by apparently a stranger who spoke to them in German. "He invited us to return home with him. A German in Jamaica? Yes, my dear child, there are Germans all over the world." This was from an actual letter written in 1778.
Goodness.
She went on to add, "The German who we met on shore was born, was from Holstein, Holstein. He was a joiner by profession," which I think must be like a, what is a joiner, Lay? J-O-I-N-E-R. He's like a
carpenter.
Blacksmith. A carpenter? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I believe maybe carpenter.
He
maybe,
and his...
Maybe it sounds like somebody that works in ironworks, you know.
That's what I wondered, ironworks, okay. "He and his brother came to this country," meaning Jamaica, 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. So this was 1778, and it was 17 years before that. Skilled in art, hardworking, and thrifty, a moderate drinker of rum, as are many Englishmen and Germans here." This is from the letter. "He grew very rich, so rich in fact that now he owns 7 large houses in this city as well as a workshop with more than 30 workmen. We ask for the lady of the house so that we may be able to pay our respects to her also, as we do in our country, but she didn't appear." Listen to this. Later we learned that the joiner and his brother each had a negress for wives.
Wow.
Whom they had bought at a slave market. "The white women of Europe are not worth much here. Instead of working, they become overly fond of luxury and spend about 12, it seems, must be pounds, no, 12, whatever the money was at that time, of their husband's money per year. Therefore, those who do not wish to spend so much on a white woman, prefer to buy a black one from Africa. Aren't they so much, aren't they as much members of the human race as are European women? And of what importance is the color of their skin? So even then, there were people questioning, you know, what is the difference? Isn't that something? This letter was found in a collection published in 1783. Oh, my gosh. And I'm just fascinated by all of this. So if our listeners like history, please let us know, because I am planning, although this is the end of History Month, I am planning to have perhaps a segment on the show that we will dub as Did You Know? And it will be something about history. So I would like to get some feedback on that, because this show is to for your enlightenment, enjoyment, and we are asking you to participate. Although I'm having so much fun with it, but I want you to enjoy too. And I want to welcome my listeners online, and I'm sorry that I might not be able to participate with them because I'm not the techie person, and I don't have a techie person online tonight. But do visit us again, and pretty soon we'll be in the chat room chatting with you or labrishing with you. We don't chat. All we do is labrish.
Labrish.
Sharon, were you familiar with that?
Madge, when you call her Sharon, it sounds a little bit too Jewish.
Could you ask a question? What a joiner is? I think it has something to do with carpenter.
Okay.
You have to call me back. I was listening to a radio program, and what this thing a joiner is, I don't think that's what it is.
Who's online now? Who's talking?
I'm calling to let them know. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Who's calling?
I'm not sure.
Oh, she didn't identify herself. However, I think I mispronounced your name before. And
yeah.
Donna reminded me that I was calling you Sharon, and you're Sharon. So
that's
would you
correct,
say your
yes.
name for me?
Sharon.
So I am saying it right, Leigh. She
yes,
is
Sharon.
All right,
correctly.
Okay.
yeah. It's actually Sharon, but it's S-H-E-R-O-N.
Oh,
and
different.
You pronounce it Sharon.
Sharon.
Yeah.
So I am. I got
which,
it.
Which is Jewish.
You got it right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yes. She got
and this is
I
not an affected name. This is the name that's actually on my birth certificate. So.
Great.
That's
a beautiful
another story
name.
For another time.
Yeah, it's a beautiful name. We love it.
Thank you.
So,
the topic today was fascinating.
I picked that up from your mother. Your mother, when she would call in, she would say, I'm Sharon's mother. And
yes.
So, of course, mother calls you that, and I'm like, oh, there it is. So
yeah,
thank
because
you, Donna.
I,
thank you.
Yeah, I thought I might have mispronounced it to
no,
your mother. So is your mother on
right.
tonight?
Your name pronounced correctly. You know, so
thank
that we're
you.
Glad to.
Yes, yes. I made an effort tonight to say it correct. And I suppose it's because I was saying it incorrect before while Lay thought I was saying it incorrect again.
Okay.
So we got
well,
that straight.
I'm glad the family has adopted me and is calling me by my proper name.
Right.
Well, you know, I got in trouble with my father's name, my father's middle name, which, you know, is Kermit. And
Rob?
People want to call it, to spell it K-E-R-M-E-T, but
it's
K-E-R-M-I-T, and that's a Jewish name.
Mm,
did you know that,
okay.
Margaret?
No, I didn't know it's a Jewish name. I just know that my grandfather was Jewish. I didn't know it's
yeah,
a Jewish name.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that for your benefit.
Yes.
The middle name tells the tale.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. Hmm. So, and now you can see that the Portugal and Brazil connection all of this because, you know, the Portuguese put them out.
The
they went to
the
Brazil.
Jews comes, the Jews from Spain, because of the Inquisition, you know, they were throwing out the Christians, the Catholics. They had to find a home. So they all left and went to, you mentioned before, the New World. So they went to South America, different places, and over time they would go up north again to the different islands, ending up like in Jamaica.
Oh, well, I have some interesting information about the Jews in the United States, specifically New York. But do you know that they came through by way of Jamaica?
Some of them did, the Sephardic Jews.
Most of them did,
yeah,
according to this documentation. And
yeah,
they were the first ones in New York. I just found that very interesting.
Were these the Orthodox Jews, what we would call the Orthodox Jews?
I think they called those Jews, this rabbi told me, Sephardic Jews.
Yes.
Okay.
There were two different kind of Jews who went to Jamaica. And at one point, you know, some of them were in Spanish Town, some of them were in Port Royal. And eventually they merged together to become one before they built their synagogues and all of that. But they were like from two different disciplines. But it seems like most of them came from Portugal. That's where they came from, you know, by way of other places. But I know that the majority of the ones who settled in New York came through Jamaica. As a matter of fact, they were in Jamaica, in Spanish Town, for quite some time. So it's just all tied together, and it's just all so very, very interesting. And I remember, I don't know if any of our callers remember, that I had mentioned once about how fascinated I was as a child when I visited Savlamar, because they would have this Hindu celebration, which was Hussein. And in these documents, it talks about, you know, the Indians did not really have proper, you know, their religion was never respected or recognized. Where the Jews, I suppose, built their synagogue, and the Catholics had their thing, and, you know, the other things. The Indians really, they were sort of, they came sort of late, and they sort of didn't have their own place of worship. So, but they would still be involved in their traditions in terms of parades and things like that. And, of course, they stuck together. And that's how the Hussein procession was near, they were near the seaport towns, because part of it's a Hindu celebration. And it gives you the details on the story, you know, what is going on in their dance and all of that. But it's a very elaborate, like a tabernacle that, you know, they took on their shoulders, and they have their musical things going on, and the ladies in the beautiful, you know, Indian dress,
saris,
dancing, and they take this beautiful, bejeweled tabernacle right down to the sea, and the men walk and push it in the sea, and they push it out to as far as it can sink, and then it just disappears. And I was so fascinated as a child. I don't think they're doing that celebration anymore in Savlamar. I don't know. I haven't been there in a lot of years. But as a child, I remember that. And when I came to the United States, and even here in Atlanta, and I asked some of my friends if they've ever heard of the Hussein, they would say, no, they never heard of it. And at one point, I was thinking, you know, I'm getting so old. I wonder if it's all in my head. And then I went out to Black River when my aunt passed away, and went to Savlamar, and one of my girlfriends who still lives there gave me a picture that she had taken when we were little girls, or was taken during that time, of the tabernacle, you know, the thing that they sunk in the water. And I was just so thrilled to get it. Of course, I lost it in my house fire. But there, you know, there are pictures of it I have seen pictures of it on a couple of websites. I think the Indians have a special website now. That is also on the resource link on Backyard Labrish. So I want to thank my listeners for sharing with us this evening and to encourage you to become part of the community and join the Labrish. So we have a couple more minutes, and if anyone would like to make a comment or to join in with a question or a suggestion, please let me know by hitting 1 on your telephone. So, Sharat, are you still there? Is your mic still
yes,
open?
Yes, I think I'm still here.
I want to thank you for being a guest, and I want to ask you, perhaps we'll book a special show for you to share with us the event that you just attended, because I know that it has something to do with our history.
Yes, that would be very, very good.
All right.
Yes, thank you for that opportunity. Yes, that would be nice.
All right. So go ahead.
It was extremely, extremely enjoyable. I had a very, very great experience. That's all I can say.
Where did it take place?
It took place this year in Somerset Falls for the first time, which is in Portland, which is quite close to the sea.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say kudos to the organizers and to everyone who participated. It was a fabulous event.
Mm.
I mean, I just felt so proud.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, and we'll be giving you,
having
a show.
Yes, I'll be giving the reports.
Yes. And
so I won't give too much away.
Right. I want to actually use this opportunity to thank Dr. Joy Lumsden for the great work she's doing on the history that we have shared the past 2 weeks. And for our listeners who might have missed those shows, they're archived. And if you just click on the link when you go to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio, you will see all the shows. You can listen to all of the shows or any particular one that you might have an interest in. But so, Dr. Lumsden, if you're listening, again, we want to thank you and to let you know that we're really, really grateful for the wonderful research that you're doing. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's almost time for us to say goodbye. I want to thank you all for being with us and for making the backyard so comfortable. You know, what we do on the island, we get together with friends or people of like minds. We relax. We enjoy the cool trade winds that blow across our island every evening. No matter what, the trade winds come. It takes away all the pollution. It cools the island down, and we're usually chilling, the men with a drink in their hand, and sometimes the ladies with a drink too. But mostly, you know, we're just labrishing, chilling, and taking it easy. So we hope you'll join us each Wednesday at 8 o'clock and just chill with us. And for those of you who might not know, you can listen online. If you're busy and doing something else on your computer, you can just click on the link. If you're not on our mailing list, make sure that you sign up and tell us you want to be on our mailing list so we can send you a link so that you can listen to the show while you do your other things on the computer. And for those of you who are listening online who might not want to participate and interact, you can put us on speakerphone and just move the phone around with you as you do your chores, because that's what I do sometimes, right? So I'd like to just share that with you. So does any of our callers have anything they'd like to let us know before we sign off? Just let me know.
Good night from the Bronx.
Good night, Mr. Bronx.
that's probably the reason why most of the people came there and they continue to stay in Jamaica was because of the breeze, the music, and the white rum, those combinations together.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, Donna. Remember when we last week we talked about it, even before, I forgot what year it was, when the man who started the collegiate college would talk about the shopkeepers having to have a drink with every customer that came in the door. They would have to have a drink with them. And at one point, this poor man staggered into the back of his business and begged some of the clerks to come out and have a drink with the next customer because he had had 13 and
oh my
would
goodness.
Have no more.
Talk about drinking away the profits.
Yes. So
anywhere,
the drinking
you know?
Has been going on a long time. Oh, dear. That is really funny. Well, 718-798 has a raised hand. We have a couple of minutes, so I'm going to open the mic. You're live, 718-798. Oh, you're not live anymore. Let's see.
Okay, I think that was my mom.
Oh, it's your mom? Okay.
Yes, she's a faithful supporter.
Oh,
thanks,
well, we just appreciate her. And
she
mom,
listens every week.
Yeah, that's great. And, Mom, as you will notice that I finally got your daughter's name right, Sharon.
Thank you. It took me years to get it right.
Well, that makes me feel a little better. But Donna is the one who pointed it out to me. She said, "Did you hear her, Mama?" I said, "No, I was just so excited about her being on the show." So I'd like to thank you for listening. And
it's
we
my
just
pleasure.
Appreciate it. We're just having fun here in the backyard.
Yes, that I knew. I heard it all.
Oh, great.
Hey, Mom.
And we'd like to ask our listeners to invite their friends to tune in, either online or just calling us and putting their phone on speaker and just sharing with us here in the backyard. So again, I want to thank everybody for being here, and I look forward to seeing you and hearing you next week. So let's all say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Have a great week.
You do the same.
Thank you. And this
bye
is Margaret Marshall, your host on Backyard Libraries, signing off. Bye.
Bye for now.